Coaching as Benevolence, a podcast for people who are curious about using coaching for self-development. I'm Erin with Roots and Wings Grief and Loss Coaching.
And I'm LaShawn with Michelle Sage Place Positive Intelligence Coaching.
Today we are interviewing George Ackerman, who is a Parkinson's disease caregiver survivor and a tireless and committed advocate for finding a cure for Parkinson's disease. George recently released his book, A Son's Journey from Parkinson's Disease Caregiver to Advocate, in memory of his mother, Sharon. We are looking forward to this conversation with George, and we are weaving in questions about grief and Parkinson's and coaching practices such as self-care and care support, in line with the theme of our podcast, Coaching as Benevolence. George, please introduce yourself and welcome. We are so grateful that you are here with us today.
Thank you and your entire audience. It means the world to me to have this opportunity. My background is I'm an attorney. Then I became a police officer. I'm reserve now and did my PhD in criminal justice, but worked to help advocate for individuals who lost their loved ones, unfortunately, due to crime, specifically murder in West Palm Beach, Florida. And I, unfortunately, again, not a lot of unfortunates, but there's a lot of good too. But I became the caregiver for my mother when she was very sick due to Parkinson's and passed on 1/1/2020, where I shifted, because I had no choice in a way, from caregiver to advocate in her memory. So everything I do today really is to, in a way, help me grieve. I miss her. She's my best friend, and that's why I was, in a way, excited to be on your show, because you two are amazing, inspire me, and again, I'm just grateful for the time today.
Thank you for that. And you know, on the note of grief, you mentioned grief, so we'll start there. You talk about grief in your book. You briefly just brought it up. So what has been your experience with grief over the past couple of years?
Yeah, I think it's very important to tackle tough topics like grief. I feel, in my opinion, again, that a lot of people don't. You know, we have a beginning, middle, and end of life, and really no one, maybe 1% of the population, wants to even mention that portion, the end. I'm still grieving today, even though it's been 4 years, like I mentioned, because I used to pick up a phone and my mother was there, you know, 24/7. I used to take a little drive over, community over, and she was there. She was always there for me, whether she was busy. Even as a child, she was a school teacher and had a master's degree and sacrificed her whole education, her career to take care of me and my brother. So I knew when it was time that she needed me, I would sacrifice anything, because I wouldn't be who I am today speaking to you both if it wasn't for her lessons, her guidance, and her mentorship. But grieving is something, unfortunately, I don't feel you can ever just move on. I've heard people say that to other people. I'm the type of person, I think it's how my mother raised me, that I fight. So obviously I can't, unfortunately, fight for a cure for her anymore. But I realized a year or two ago that it's not just about my mother and I, it's about everybody still fighting or struggling with the disease. So today, sitting here, I'm, you know, proud to be an advocate for everyone diagnosed, for their loved ones, and also in memory of all the, I think, millions that we've lost, unfortunately, due to Parkinson's and their caregivers who still are struggling and may not even know it, or may have just moved on because they didn't realize their voice still matters and their loved one still should be heard. So that's my work today. You know, one other thing we'll probably get to is my advice is you always have to take care of yourself first before your loved one. Unfortunately, I didn't follow that, and I still don't today, because, you know, I feel like we, even if we reach one person today, we've changed the world. So that's where I'm stuck in a weird place with grieving is, you know, I really want to reach everyone. So I'll go on 500 shows. But at the same time, my own health, I feel like some days a truck rolled over me, because I just am giving a lot back, but it means a lot, but it's, you know, a certain balance that I'm never, unfortunately, going to figure out.
That's a good key word there, balance. And it's something that isn't maybe even attainable in grief and loss, but the way that you are paying attention to it, I think, is a key strategy when we think about how we tend to our grief. So thank you for sharing that. LaShawn, what were you going to add?
About self-care, you did mention that it's a struggle for you to find balance. You have interviewed hundreds of people, and that is so impressive on your website, togetherforsharon.com. When you look at those interviews of people who have talked about living with Parkinson's and the fight to find a cure for Parkinson's, and I would like to know, and I'm sure our listeners would also like to know, what words of wisdom have you learned from the people that you have interviewed about self-care and that balance?
Yeah, I mean, the main reason I did that, and it wasn't easy, and I kind of cut back on them, but then when I see a new journey and somebody who inspires me, I do it again. And it's got to be a point, like where you have to move to the next thing, unfortunately. But I want people to know they're never alone. So the number one lesson I've learned that I felt alone as a caregiver, my mother felt alone as a battling Parkinson's. But when people go to the website completely free, they see the interviews. Just the other day, I interviewed an incredible, like one of the highest ranking doctors at Temple University who deals with Parkinson's, and she's incredible. And I just put her as up today. So that's why I just keep fighting. But a lot of the lessons I learned about self-care is really back to you have to take care of yourself or you're no good to your loved one. But, like I said, I want to do anything at the time to help my mother at least feel comfortable. And if that meant sacrificing 24/7, I would have done it again today. Same thing with advocacy, is get to a point where you need a break. But every, like I think I mentioned to you, amazing ladies, I have a major back surgery, unfortunately, which is not something I'm looking forward to. The third one, and this will be last, whether it works or not. There's a day a week ago, I just was in horrible pain in my back. I laid down. I actually feel myself. I'm like, you know what? I don't want to curse here, but forget that. And I got up and started advocating again because, back pain stinks. It's 24/7, but it's not something that I can still do things. I can still be with you. I can still type and do life and see the kids. I mean, I feel pick the kids up. They're getting too big for me. They're growing, but not the same. But, to me, Parkinson's is the number one priority. Even though, fortunately, too late for my mother, it's not for so many more. This Saturday, we're actually flying to New York City, Central Park, to the Unity Walk for Michael J. Fox Foundation. And it's basically about free, I mean, not free, but I think it is free for anyone in the world that wants to just join us. And we'll be walking in memory of my mother. But to be actually there with people with Parkinson's and family members and others who are walking in memory of the loved one is something that changes the person's life. And if it doesn't, then maybe we need them to get more awareness.
And what does participating in that walk mean for you?
For me, I'm actually looking forward to meeting some faces that I've actually become family with online. We started togetherforsharon.com, and I thought three or four people might see it, and that would be great. But there's a counter; it tells you, and you can see it. It's hard, it's small on the front page. It says over 40,000 people at this point, I think, have visited the site. So that means it's working. It means, I mean, in a way, it's two things. Number one, either what both of us or all three of us are doing is working because we're getting the word out. Or, unfortunately, this is the fastest growing neurodegenerative disease in the world, which means more people becoming aware because they're either getting it or their neighbors are getting it or the mailman or truck taxi driver or anyone. So I'm worried that that's the reason it's growing. If it's because of my work, then that's great. But, I'm only one person. We're not a foundation. We don't accept money. We just want everyone to know that we love them. We send our support and virtual hugs, and that they're never alone.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Speaking of people being diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, my father-in-law was recently diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. And I noticed in your book that, and this might be just my misinterpretation or what I interpreted, so please correct me if I'm wrong, there was some sense that well-meaning and concerned family members and loved ones who wanted to kind of help with the caregiving of your mother were adding to your stress rather than relieving your burden. And one of the things that I, as someone who is a family member of someone who is going to be the main caregiver to my father-in-law, which is my mother-in-law, and other people who also have friends and family who would like to support the caregiver, what are some suggestions that you have for those of us who would like to support the caregiver?
Yeah, that was interesting that you brought that area up, because that's one that I was worried about when I was writing, because I'm very honest and I'm not going to lie. So I put everything in my heart in there, and I actually were having a big release party, a private thing next month, and they'll all be there. So I'm hoping they didn't read that page, but I had to be honest. I mean, for me, I'm the kind of person that, again, I was raised to have a plan. You have to have a plan, and I think you can have a backup plan. To plan if there's a problem, but you need to follow that plan, because I feel I might not be an expert, but I knew exactly what my mother needed and how to help her and at least make sure she was safe. That's my world in law enforcement and being a son. So I just, there were people who came, I love that, and they were nice, bring food. But there were certain points where my mother told me, and they didn't know this, that she doesn't want anyone after 8 p.m. because she had to settle in, or she doesn't want certain people at this time, or someone called, they were making her sad or cry. Let's not talk to them, because I really wanted to surround her and Emmy with only positive thoughts and positive things. And it was tough, because there were some days where, she just didn't want to see someone, and I didn't know how to break it to them. So I had to, make up something or this or that. So it's all real and live in the book. But if I had to go, I mean, honestly, I wish it was just me and my mother, because there were a lot of inside things and trouble that we had. That no one really could understand unless they were with spending the time I did with her. And I was holding her hand through the whole thing, and it was not easy. I mean, we were told you don't die of Parkinson's, you die with it, which is belief true. But I think it might have been a bad reaction, possibly to so many drugs. Because when she passed, the saddest day was cleaning out our home. And I had five huge contractor size, not regular kitchen, but contractor bags. And I can't imagine that's, too healthy. Even if it might slow tremor, it does other horrible things. It destroyed her stomach. So back to your question, it's not easy, being a caregiver, because you're not just handling your loved one, you're handling people around her or them, you're handling family. Thankfully, my mother did plan. She had a will. She had her, I was her power of attorney. She also had the funeral plan, which again, we didn't know was for the Parkinson, but so that really alleviated a lot of problems, because I imagine a family that doesn't have a will, it's going to have a world war. And I was thankful we didn't go to that world. But you just gotta plan, is my advice, and just gotta do what's good for your loved one, even if it offends someone. Or I remember one specific story. My brother, she probably won't hear this, and he's not really as involved even back then. He just wasn't able to, and I was. He's an artist, and he loves his art. Well, we bought my mother a brand new home, and she loved it. And I was just concerned again about her health, making sure she didn't fall in life. He was arguing about putting up pictures all like, and not a little picture. I'm talking about a huge size mural, which is like, we were just worried about our health, and I didn't have time for that stuff. So he might have been offended and things, but I didn't really care, because it wasn't about art and this. Now he probably meant well, because he wanted, surround her with things. Maybe she'll like it. But again, down deep, the only thing that mattered was her health and things, and all this other stuff was kind of just causing more conflict and problems for me, and it was very stressful. And even telling, her loved ones that they couldn't come at certain time, they would be mad at me. But it was really, again, because my mother asked, but I took the blame and I didn't mind. But so I really liked the book for that reason, that I could bring out everything and kind of help me grieve too. Just not just talking about it with you, but also writing it. And I kept a journal the last year, which I'm sure you've seen. It's in the book, and I never shared that before with anyone. And sometimes I don't know if we have time, I can even read a little teeny section, but it takes you into the world of, how I was feeling at the moment, which I can't remember a lot of the time, because there's just so many things to talk about, and we have, little time. So
Is there something in particular about how you were feeling that you can easily recall that might be helpful for our
I
listeners
mean, I
to
could,
hear?
or like even here's one, which is a tougher time, September 25th, 2019. My mother again passed on 1/1/2020. I saw mom today with the children. She was 100% fine and happy. After we left, the nurse, who was more like an aide, it wasn't a nurse, reported to me that mom lost it, couldn't understand where she was, didn't know where she was going to live, and was delusional. Whenever she is with us, she's fine. This disease is horribly fascinating and terrible, frustrating and baffling. So it literally, takes you into the moment. When I was trying to just do my best, but I would be with my mother. She was somewhat okay, because she felt safe, and she also had late onset dementia, which brought hallucinations and delusions. which is another podcast, and that brings, as you both I'm sure know, a lot more frightening things. So she was scared of the women who were we were paying to just watch over her, because she was independent, lived alone, and now you're sticking people, strangers, in, and they would rotate. So there's like three or four different women a day. That's not a normal thing for someone who lived on their own and liked it their whole life. So so she thought they were harming her. I had to put video cameras in and made sure they weren't harming her. But it was just like a ongoing like circle of, I don't want to say hell, but some days that's what it felt like.
Yeah. And you mentioned exercise in the book being so important to your health, and not maybe having the opportunity to do that consistently as a caretaker, and yet still having some opportunity with the help of your wife. Maybe talk a little bit about exercise, since, you know, we talk about movement as part of a coaching concept as well.
Yeah, because there's no cure for Parkinson's doesn't mean that you can't slow the progression. And one of the best ways is 45 minutes a day of exercise, whether you have PD or not, whether you're a health expert, a doctor, or an aide or a caregiver, it's still important. Again, Parkinson's, unfortunately, affects the neurological, so the brain, the movement. But if you exercise, there's statistics and data showing that it might slow the progression, but you had to be aware of it early on. And you had to kind of be diagnosed early on. My mother had it for 15 years. I only became involved the last four. I knew what the word Parkinson's was, but I had no clue what it was or anything about it. She never really told us. I think she didn't want to burden the families, but I don't know if that's true, or she didn't really know or understand what it, you know, again, because we relied on doctors. And again, I'm not mad at the medical community, because it's the disease fault. We lost her, but I do feel she lost 15 years of her life and 15 years after because of Parkinson's. So, you know, that's very important, exercise, but also diet, health, eating right. I interviewed an expert recently in the field, and he thinks that it's the environment, which I fully agree, is how you might be able to, unfortunately, get Parkinson's. So the water we drink, the pesticides they put in our shopping supermarkets, I was shocked when he told me, and I happened to be wearing a suit, that the cleaning actually, you know, we bring our clean, dry stuff, the chemicals. So I wanted to take this jacket off during the interview and burn it. And so, you know, it's scary, because there are a lot of things we can do to prevent it, but I don't think we realize it, or we just don't take the precautions. Even me, I mean, I'm so busy with, you know, trying to promote awareness and advocacy for a cure, that there's many times I'll just grab something to eat fast. I don't even wash it. So that's my own, you know, mistake. So we don't think it's genetic. I'm not really sure still. But if you know the famous case like Camp Lejeune, where the water was contaminated and many individuals got Parkinson's and other diseases. It's also Paraquai, which is used in pesticides, which is banned in China, but not in the U.S., which makes no sense. It's a poison. So what we can do, reach out to your senators, your representatives, tell them to ban Paraquai, tell them to, you know, look into Camp Lejeune, tell them to stop allowing pesticides that can kill people or cause things like Parkinson's on our supermarket food that we feed to our own children. I was thinking for a few months now, because of all the new information I learned, because I'm still researching daily, that we might want to install a water filtration system into my own home. So that we're not, who knows what contaminations are coming through. You know, even the bottled water we buy, I'm not too sure it's safe. Because the other day, I don't smell my drinking, but I even had a smell from the water bottle. I won't say what company. And I was telling my wife, this doesn't seem right. And she agreed. So, but it's expensive, you know, it's not reasonable. I mean, even caregiving is expensive, I'm sure you know. But I mean, I spent $12,000 a month the last year of my mother's life, because we needed to have it around the clock. So my goal was she wouldn't fall. But I knew if she fell on top of everything else, it would have been a complete, you know, disaster. So those are some of the areas that I really want to encourage people to go out and try to even just review and think about, just, you know, water filtration, dieting, clean the fruits, be careful. They did say to take your dry cleaning and let it air out outside. I don't know how effective that is. These are just great tips that are free that can help too.
I wonder if they have any like dry cleaning services that don't use those harmful chemicals. That's something also to look into.
They say they do, and even pesticides today, always like been environment friendly, but we're really trusting them with our lives. So who knows? They might say it. Unfortunately, as an attorney, I've seen a lot of laws and cases, like the famous Ford Pinto. Not to get into a lecture on legal issues, but their cars were blowing up, loading on impact. So guess what? No offense to Ford, but they instead of spending the millions to fix it and save lives, they allowed it to continue to happen till a major lawsuit came and that stopped. But we were losing lives because of their defect in their vehicle. So same thing today. Until unfortunately enough people are affected, no one seems to do something, which is sad. And that's the issue with awareness, why it's so hard in some days, because it's if it's not affecting a person individually, they might not be immune, but they might not even, it's not their fault. They just don't know about it. But I don't want them to learn about it when they just find out they've been diagnosed or a loved one is diagnosed. I want them to know before so they can prepare, fight, and help me also end this disease.
It sounds like, yeah, like you said, education is really important too. Just to be not only aware, but also to educate yourself on what we're putting in our body, what we're putting in our environment. It seems like it's an encompassing issue that isn't just about Parkinson's, but it is about our health as individuals, our health for our family, and also for society at large. The fact that you're shining a light on Parkinson's and getting a cure for Parkinson's also shines a light on the importance of being aware, as something that Aaron and I talk about a lot, self-aware and also aware of your environment and what is out there.
Yeah, I mean, I still learn every day. I mean, I speak to a lot of experts. The other day, I interviewed an individual who is in founder of Peloton for Parkinson's, and it's incredible how many people there are out there, but many are just not aware. So that's why I do, the interviews, the podcast, all free, voluntary, just to get awareness out there. That'll be airing in a week or two, but it's, I really enjoy not the interviews, not just the podcast, because I like speaking with both of you, meet some incredible people, and I learn something from all both of you every day and anyone I meet. So you just have to, I think, have an open mind and be willing to explore different things and positives and the negatives of all these areas.
I'm kind of thinking about that exploration. Is there anything you wish you knew before you started working towards supporting finding a cure for Parkinson's disease?
Yeah, always my big thing is I don't regret anything. So when I do look back, even writing the book, I don't think I could have done anything different at all. Like even today, the only thing I wish is we had a cure. My mother would still be next to me, and we would still be arguing on Sundays about what food we want to order, because we have a big family, and everybody would have wars about what we're going to eat, what kind of food. So now it doesn't happen. It's kind of sad. It's funny because when you're going through it, you don't realize, those odd moments you'll miss. For awareness, not much. The only thing, again, I'm still trying to juggle is my brain wants to do everything. Like I want to speak to the world, and then my body is not catching up. So it's, I still, I work full time. I have three children, but this stuff means a lot. Thankfully, I have a very supportive family. My wife is incredible, but even she, a week or two ago, said, she wants me to see the kids a little more, because as we're speaking, I don't work out as much, partially because of my back, but I used to live, breathe, and eat fitness. I was a personal trainer myself. I would run several miles a day, competitive basketball, and those things are so important for caregivers and anyone, because it you've kind of takes your mind out of life for a minute and you get a little break. But without those things, it's been tough. And again, I enjoy more staying with both of you today than working. So it's okay.
I speaking of, regrets, let's go the or something that you would have done differently. Let's say that. What are some accomplishments? Like, what do you see your biggest accomplishment has been so far, and what strategies did you use to tap into achieving that?
I don't want this to end this discussion, because both of your questions have been amazing. Because I am very honest, I've done a lot of these, but these are all really important questions that haven't been asked. So let's see. So I think the most proud moments are, being there with my mother, even though it's tough, but being able to get her to smile, even for those teeny little moments. Another one is with the book. It's the cover. Some days it's hard to even talk about, but if everyone out there does pick up the book or even just sees it online, actually the Michael J. Fox Foundation is now going to put it on their website, which is really incredible, and it's getting out there now. But so this picture is my mother and I at my wedding, at the son mother son dance, and it was probably one of the important moments of my life, because I met my wife and we were finally becoming husband and wife. Kids weren't here yet. That's the other great moment. But that, in those 2 or 3 minutes, my mother and I, we joked, we laughed, we talked, and Parkinson's disease didn't exist in our minds. It didn't stop us. It didn't thwart the time together. It didn't catch up as fast as, this date as it did later on. But it's hard still to talk about that picture, because I wish I could bring it back. I wish I could relive it. One thing my mother feared was not being here for her granddaughter's wedding, which, unfortunately she won't, but she always asked me, am I going to be here for that? And I didn't know what to say. So those moments, everyone listening, if you have with your loved one, cherish them. Hug your loved one, forget about nonsense, like a fight. If you had an argument, who cares? This is about life, about love, and about, just not knowing what the future will bring. So again, my only regret is, and also I wish I had done a, back then we didn't have podcasts like now a lot of people have them, even I do. I never dreamt I would, but I wish I had a show with my mother before Parkinson's, and just about her life and me growing up, because I don't have that now. And writing the book was tough in the few chapters about her life. I luckily was able to refer to her sister, Ellen, who's still with us, thankfully, and she shared a lot of information about my grandmother and that I was too small to know, and my mother. So I'm grateful to her for that. But unfortunately, if my aunt wasn't here, I don't really know more, anyone to tell the history. So the only regret I do have is I wish we had podcast technology back then, and I wish I had the show, like the Sharon and George show, and not about parking, just about life. And I would have loved that, because now I could have referred back to it. And I'm hoping my kids someday will look at all our podcasts, and even this one today, they'll be adding it to togetherforsharon.com, but maybe they'll be inspired to.
Do you have a memory of your mom prior to Parkinson's disease that you'd like to share to preserve that memory on this podcast?
Yeah, but I mean, we're from New York, so I'm from Brooklyn, and she loved Broadway, and thankfully she brought me to so many shows like Fiddler on the Roof and Phantom of the Opera, and those are my favorite show, Into the Woods. And oddly enough, I didn't like Cats, but we saw Cats. But right before my mother passed, we had music. We tried everything. Like literally, there was nothing. Today, I'm proud to say we tried it all, even side things such as music therapy. We wanted to do animal therapy, but they didn't have it at the time. But those are, again, the small moments that might be able to make your loved one smile for a short time and forget this disease, any disease. So, towards the end of my mother's life, some days she wasn't up for hearing the music, but we had a female come in and she played guitar. I played guitar because of my mother, actually. And we had a big snowstorm when I was in high school and couldn't leave the house. She's like, "Why don't you get a guitar and learn?" So I had a guy, a country guy, come in, and I had a rock and roll guy. So I learned to play more for fun, but I was able to sit down the last week of my mother's life, 7 days before she passed. And she unfortunately wasn't able to say much, like even speak or even function anymore. And I sat down with the music therapist, and we played the song Memory. It's one of my f mother's favorite from the Broadway show Cats, where she took me as a child. And we played the song, and we videotaped it. It's on togetherforsharon.com. If you scroll down the main page to the bottom, you'll see it. And you won't see my mother, because she wasn't doing well. And I don't know if you'll be able to hear it, but when we finished, my mother did say thank you. She loved it. And those were the last words she ever was able to say. That I have that memory now, forever. And I'm glad she at least got to hear us play a song to her, one that she loved, is one of the last acts of, unfortunately, again, her life.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful image. And one of the things I love about your book is it's compelling. It is inspirational. When I was reading it, I was thinking, this is very similar to one of those epic tales. You've got the hero, which is you, and then you have your beautiful wife. You start with her, and she's supporting you, championing you. And then you have your mother that you're fighting for, that you're that you have this amazing quest for the cure, and it gets bigger, and it becomes more of the story of a son and a mother, and it becomes a story of everyone who is fighting this disease and that's living with this disease and making the best of their life despite the disease. And of course, the disease, of course, is the villain in this story, looming and dark and almost has no name, even though it is Parkinson's disease. We don't know where it comes from, what its motivations are, but it does seem to be a formidable foe. And that was one of the things that was so compelling about your story. And I just wanted to thank you for sharing that story with the world and sharing your time, your effort, your dedication to your mother and to her memory is just so inspirational and beautiful. So thank you so much for reaching out to Aaron and to us and, you know, sharing your story. It's just been such a gift, and I appreciate you and everything that you're doing.
Well, thank you for getting the book, reading it, and sharing it. It's funny because now when we met, I didn't have it out yet, and now I can refer to it on these talks, and it means a lot. We just finished the audio book. I had somebody else do it because I like their voice better, and he actually makes it sound like a movie. So now I need you to help me write the script, and someday you never know, because I do think it should be out there. I don't even want money and things. I just think, you know, Michael J. Fox released the first, in my view, movie ever a year ago on Apple TV. Don't recall the name. Something with, I don't know if it's Touch or, but anyway, it's out there, and it was important because I don't read a lot of comments on social media, but I saw so many people writing. Now they're aware of Parkinson's. So he's, you know, changed the game. He's dedicated his life to advocacy. He's one of my heroes. But I think we need more from the media, from celebrities, from everybody, because unless we're all in this together, we're going to be further from a cure. But again, knowing that you have read it means the world to me and my family. So thank you.
Yeah. And then just to circle back to the name of our podcast, Coaching as Benevolence, I feel like our time together has been incredibly benevolent, and you embody benevolence. And maybe we could end with you speaking a little bit about that personality trait of yours and how that has maybe been a value since our podcast before this. We talked about values, how that's been a value of yours potentially.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, a lot of how I am today, present myself, is due to my mother's lessons in my life. Growing up in New York, we had really nothing, but my mother sacrificed her whole career, so she would stay home with me and my brother, but let my father go to medical school. Finally, they were able to get out of some of the tougher areas. But then, you know, I had a lot of obstacles, too. It's not easy getting through law school, let alone going to the police academy, who, no offense, can't stand news trainees, and they hate lawyers. So that was an interesting, but that built character. You know, any obstacle in your life, you know, you have to push through. Same thing with caregiving. So I equate a lot of it, you know, to that. Also, the PhD, I mean, it took 7 years. I wrote a 300-page dissertation and wanted to quit several times, but I always had my mother and wife in my corner, almost like a boxing fight, you know, cheering me to keep going. My mother didn't want me to be in law enforcement because it's so dangerous, so she never liked that. But, you know, I'm a reserve, which is what I am. Me and you go in the street completely free. You wouldn't notice because I still have the badge, I'm the gun, all that. But I actually never got paid. So since 2006, I put my life on the line completely free, not from any reason, just because I wanted to help the others in the community. And it's the same thing now. Just want to help other people. Sometimes I get the weird responses because they're shocked. You know? It's like either I'm not real, I'm fake, or it's not possible, sadly, in 2024 that someone can just want to help people and not want anything in return, but I really don't. And that's kind of the harder message that I've been trying to do. And my future book I have ready also is going to really concentrate on people like me, because I'm not diagnosed with Parkinson's. I'm not a caregiver of someone alive, but there's a whole world of people like me who are forgotten, in my view, still by a lot of communities. And I've been lucky because I met so many people in the Parkinson's community that have opened their arms to me and become family. But there are still many who have it, and I'm still kind of baffled why. Because if you could get everybody to just help, my big thing is I want to promote everyone. I don't want anything in return, and I still get people who are not really. They're weary. All you have to do is go to Together for Sharon. You'll see that it's all kind of grown in a life of its own. So that's what gets me through right now. I don't think I would if I didn't have people like you both in my life. And I don't think this is about just a talk, and then goodbye. I really hope this just continues and it's a conversation until we find a cure that isn't going to end. And I please encourage everyone listening to support the show and share it, because it's very important. Some of the topics that the show covers here, your show, is very critical, and more people need to also be aware of grief and end of life and benevolence and all the topics we spoke today, which I am sad again they were wrapping up. But I don't know if we're out of time, but I do have one statement I like to say. It's just so this is to you both, to your audience, to your families especially. We love you, we support you, we care a lot about you, and you're never alone. I will advocate for you, and together our voices are so much stronger. And I'm just getting started, because every day I meet somebody like both of you, or you're one of your families is affected, unfortunately, now due to PD. And instead of just going back to the drawing board after we're done, I'll be out there still fighting. But you have to know that you're never alone in this fight. And so grateful for both of your time, your audience, and I'm just an email away if anyone ever has a question or anything. I'm always there for you.
Great, thank you. And it's nice to know that people can reach out to you via email.
And togetherforsharon.com, it could subscribe to the newsletter. It's all just me. It looks like, I always joke and say, it's like if you see The Wizard of Oz, it's this beautiful world, and it's just one guy and a little machine at the end. And that's what it feels like some days. And it's not easy, because I just want to reach everyone, but that's not humanly possible. I mean, I'm only one person, but I've been managed to reach over 1,000 people. So, it's definitely making a little teeny dent. And hopefully I'll be able to do, a lot more in the future.
The one thing I would say, George, you are so generous and you have such a big heart and you give so much to others. I want to also extend also that you have support as well. And Aaron and I, we support you. We appreciate what you do and we want to follow what you do and see your journey to find a cure. And we hope that our listeners and people who hear this podcast will go to togetherforsharon.com and read your book and learn more about not just Parkinson's, but the importance of community, the importance of love and devotion to your loved ones. Learn so much from your story. So thank you so much.
Thank you both, and the words mean the world to me. And unfortunately, you're also making me want to go do more. It's too much. I'm just kidding. But yeah, we'll keep fighting. Thank you both.
Thanks for joining us for Coaching as Benevolence. I'm LaShawn with Meychelle Sage Place, Positive Intelligence Coaching.
And I'm Erin with Roots and Wings, Grief and Loss Coaching.
Have a benevolent day.